You are listening to the Pucknology Writers Room, a Pucknology podcast with your hosts, Ian Reed, Kevin Lacey, and Drew Weber. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Pucknology Writers Room. No fancy Kevin intro tonight, unfortunately. However, what you do have is you have myself, Ian Reed, being joined by Pucknology Writers Room regular. We have Drew Weber.
Hey, you got my name right. We're off to a good start.
We are all Kevin, but I figure without Kevin here, I'm gonna get it right. But AJ, prepare to be Drew all night. Also with us is from After Dark fame and also the new Pucknologists audio podcast is AJ Strong.
Not AJ Strong. I'm Kevin Lacey.
We are all Kevin Lacey. Man, it's weird having no Kevin here. It really is. Like, who am I going to throw to every time I want to switch a person?
But we're all Kevin Lacey.
That's true. All right. So, look, there's a lot going on tonight. So if you are actually one of the people watching the show, then thank you.
What are you talking about? There's nothing going on.
Nothing going on. Oh, man. Yeah. All right. So let's kind of get this thing started here. First, actually, Drew, why don't you tell us about your press box adventure?
Having the opportunity to do that was an absolutely fantastic experience. You know, been a fan my whole life, and then to finally go in to SAP Center as part of the media and not technically as a fan kind of thing was amazing. It's something I'll never forget. I want to thank you guys for, you know, helping me get the credentials. I want to thank Zach Devine if he's watching or listening at any point in time, because without him, wouldn't have been able to do this either. And he kept me company in the press box, so that was kind of cool too. But yeah, totally interesting. Got to watch the game from the rafters, headed down to the locker room after, got to interview a couple people, and got what I needed for my article.
Nice.
Now, please tell me this wasn't a one-time thing.
We'll be going back for more. They're working with us on a game-by-game basis. Going to high-demand games like opening night was probably out of the question, but going to, you know, games on, like, Tuesday night against Carolina or something like that. Against Columbus kind of thing is probably more likely because there's less media demand for it.
Yeah, it's fair. I mean, it's exciting that they're going to work with us. I think it's huge for us in general, I think, that you know, because we put a lot of time obviously into covering this team, so to have the opportunity to have someone actually go in and talk to the guys in the room and sit in the press box, and I mean, that's doesn't get much better than that.
So, oh, considering some of the stuff we've said, absolutely.
no doubt. And you know, that's one of those things where it's just like, you know, we're not gonna censor ourselves. Hopefully we don't screw you over our lack of censoring ourselves. But I mean, obviously, this is something we're very excited about, and we're hoping that Drew is able to go to a ton of games and, you know, get us a bunch of quotes. Who did you end up being able to talk to in the room?
So I was in the scrums for Martin Jones, for Michael Haley, and Peter DeBoer, and then I was able to talk to Kevin LeBanc for a little bit.
Nice.
Asked him about the transition from juniors into the NHL level.
Very cool. Very, very cool. Anyone, any exciting people you got to say hi to in the press box, or
Kevin Kurz? No.
like I said, I was next to Zach for pretty much the whole time. They had me over in like an isolated spot with like a couple of other people, but Zach was like, "Oh, I'm sitting next to Paul Gackle," but he never sits there, so I took his spot. And then, you know, we were talking to each other. And then Marcus White from Fear the Finn was with us as well. So the three of us are just kind of hanging out. So it's cool.
That's cool. That's very cool. All right. So now that we've passed Drew's press box adventure, we actually got a question. And this comes from @sandpolo89. The question says, "Hey, guys, love the podcast. Keep them up. Thank you. Can you guys talk about who should be on the fourth line and Hurdle being third line center? Good time to talk about non-regulars remaining in camp." So I thought it's a really good question, and it's definitely something that is definitely worth covering. I want to expand that though. I want to go to actually figure out who the bottom six will be, I think. Because I think it's just a little bit easier to try and sort out. I don't know the fourth line specifically. I don't know who's going to be on the fourth line specifically, but I have a group of guys that I think could play in the bottom six. So I guess let's start with that. Who do you think your bottom six is probably looking like?
Well, let me ask you this though. Is when you ask this question, are you predicating that upon the top line being Pav, Thornton, and Hurdle, or are you just saying put out your bottom six and
make your bottom six that you think? What do you think will be the bottom six opening night? Is my question.
Ooh. I'm one of those guys that if it ain't broke, don't fix it type of thing. I know that Hurdle's on a 2-year bridge deal. I know the Sharks want to eventually make him a center. And let's be honest, they'll probably use that bridge deal in order to see what they're going to have for him as a center. I hate to break it to you, kids. Marlowe and Thornton will not be here in perpetuity. So you're going to have to refresh that. But that said, I still am one of those guys that says if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And right now, Pavs, Thornton, and Hurdle look pretty outstanding on the top line. So in my long-winded way, let me answer your question. If Hurdle's on the top line, I think I probably go bottom six, third line, Marlow, Tierney, Ward, which seems to be the prevalent thought on that. And then your bottom, your fourth line, I'm probably looking at Carlson centering Nieto and LeBanc. Nieto's a left wing, LeBanc's a right wing, Carlson's a center. You still have Wingles to put in that center slot. If you're going to face a tougher team, say your LA type of team, if LeBanc is not performing the way that you were hoping to or whatever, maybe you want to take a look at Goodrow. Maybe once we're done with Timo Nucleosis, you look at Meyer in that spot. But if you switch it up and say, okay, we are going to have Hurdle centering a line and he is not going to be on the top line with the way LeBanc has played at this point, maybe you put LeBanc in Hurdle's spot with Thornton and Pavs and see how he produces. And your bottom six, you have Hurdle centering Marlow and Ward instead of Tierney, and then you have Tierney in between Nieto and Goodrow. I know that was kind of long-winded and there's a lot of names in there, but there's a lot to talk about with that, especially with those bottom six. And I didn't even mention Goldobin at this point. Sorensen, there are other names that could be potentially in the mix within a couple of months to seeing how everybody is. But those are my plans. But bottom line, I still keep Hurdle on that top line.
True.
I agree that you keep Hurdle definitely on that top line wing. Just like AJ said, you don't fix what's not broken. That line has been so good for so long that I wouldn't want to move Hurdle down. Now, AJ is right that Hurdle's on that bridge deal, and a large part of Hurdle being on this roster is that they want him to develop into that center position. But when you're so close to a Stanley Cup, I don't think you want to jeopardize it by doing that. Think about now, and then we'll figure out the future much later when Thornton and Marlow are gone and those Stanley Cup odds go down a bit. That being said, the third and fourth line, I'm going to kind of do this in two ways. I'm going to do what I think the Sharks will roll out, and then I'll say what I would do at least. Okay. So I think the Sharks are going to roll out. They're going to have Marlow, Tierney, and Ward as that third line, like AJ said. So I agree with you 100% on that. And then I think they're going to have Goodrow on the wing, Wingles at center, and then Carlson on the other wing. And Nieto will be the scratch, and LeBanc will be in the AHL. That makes sense to me because LeBanc still hasn't played against men yet. He's only played in juniors. He's obviously played the exhibition games, but nothing more than that. So I could see why they would choose Goodrow over LeBanc in that situation, because Goodrow is bigger. He has the experience. He's played against men pretty much, while LeBanc has only played against the under-20s. What I would do, though, is I would I'm trying to find my notes now. Oh, my gosh. You threw me off of that third line. Line for me would be Marlow in the center, and it would be flanked by – where'd I go? would be Ward, and then it would be Carlson on that third line. And then that fourth line would be Goodrow, Tierney, LeBanc. And the reason I say that is because in the preseason game against Anaheim, on the one I went to on Wednesday, they were the best line by far. Young group, very, very fast. And like LeBanc said in the interview that I had with them, was they have nothing to lose. They're so young. They're playing for the roster spot. So they're going to go out there and give their best. Man, I could not keep that short.
That's okay.
You and me both.
So here's my thing. I don't think LeBanc's on the opening night roster. And the reason I don't think that is because, yeah, he got off to a hot start, but then he's kind of tapered off a little bit near the end there. And I'm not saying like he's a bad player. I just think that he would be better served playing top minutes in the AHL rather than third or fourth line minutes on the Sharks. And also I think because the Sharks do stupid things, and I'm going to get to that in a second. My third line, I pretty much agree with you guys. I'd like to see, I agree with you guys. Like that's probably going to be like that Marlowe Ward,
Tierney.
Thank you. You might see that combination. You know, though, I know you, I hear you saying about start, you know, you want to be going after the cup, but you're still in the early amounts of the season. If you're going to tinker with a hurdle at center, you might do it now. So what I might do is see if we can reignite some of that magic with Carlson up on the top line. And then my third line would be Hurdle centering Marlowe and Ward. Just to see what happens, right? Because, I mean, you can always put them back at the top. We know that works. So, you know, you want to experiment, now's the time to do it. November, October, this is when you can kind of, you know, do stuff where you can experiment a little bit and see what you've got. This is why you have guys that are going to get a look and then get sent down. My big concern is the fourth line, where it's going to be, and this disturbs me greatly, but I honestly believe that the fourth line opening night is going to be some combination of Wingles, Nieto, and Haley with Gaudreau going back down. Because
we're playing the Kings?
Yeah, because we're playing the Kings, and because the Sharks have a history of playing bad, grindy, punching face guys over better players. We watched how Ben Smith couldn't get in the lineup over Mike Brown. Maybe Ben Smith's not the greatest player in the world, but he was better than Mike Brown. And yet Mike Brown still drew in, and then when people got injured, Michael Haley came up. They like Michael Haley. I don't think it's great, but I can't see him not being on the roster. I think, you know, a lot of people are like, okay, well, he'll be, you know, he'll be the seventh guy. The 13th guy. He'll be the 13th guy. Why is everyone so upset? Because we can't trust the Sharks to let him be the 13th guy, because they'll use him because they're dumb. And I don't know why they're dumb, but they are. When it comes to this stuff, they just have a soft spot for players like this in the lineup that eat 5 minutes a night and can't do anything. Personally, I think that you would go, if I had my way, you know, you're going to go, I don't know where I put Tierney in this mix. Tierney's got to be in there somewhere too. I don't know. It makes me nervous because, you know, a guy like Tommy Wingles, you have to play him because you didn't trade him. You have to fit him in the lineup. You don't have the cap space not to have him in the lineup. So I'm terrified that Michael Haley is going to be in and somebody better is going to be out, whether it's Gaudreau, Nieto, I don't know, but somebody, Tierney, I hope it's not Tierney, is going to be out, and that's problematic to me.
Now, can you see the Sharks maybe, it's kind of a hard way to put this, but maybe you see somebody like Wingles or Nieto getting a little more ice time early on in the season to kind of showcase them for a possible move for picks down the line? Because obviously you can't trade for a significant piece because you don't have the money to pay him.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I could see Wingles playing to get guys out. I mean, honestly, if you're going to want to play a Haley type, then why don't you just play Wingles? Like, that's, to me, that makes the most sense. But the fact that Haley's in camp, the fact that Haley is still up, that concerns me a lot because we've seen this before. We've seen this with Mike Brown. We saw this with John Scott. It's worrisome, I think. Shark's gonna shark. No, and it's exactly what it is. Shark's gonna shark.
The saving grace of this is that those decisions were made under McClellan, and at least so far, Peter DeBoer hasn't made hasn't, like, you know, brought up Haley for extended periods of time. At least last season he didn't. So that's the one saving grace. But if Doug Wilson is going to influence the lineup at all, that may be a cause for concern.
I still feel like Haley played a decent amount of games. Like, Mike Brown played until basically they played Mike Brown until they put him on waivers to get rid of him. I mean, other than that, he played a stupid amount of games last year over better players. So I just, it worries me. I mean, I hope I'm wrong. I hope that they would go with a line, you know, like, you know, throw Tierney between Wingles and Nieto. Poor guy. But, you know, at that point, at least, like, that's something that at least you're trying to ice the best possible lineup based on your cap constraints and everything. I just, the thing that bothers me the most is after all that talk of, you know, we're going to see the kids. We're not going to see any kids. They have no room to put any other kids in the lineup.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. And I still go back to, I think you start the season with Hurdle on that top line and see how, what kids you have that are performing. And then maybe after Thanksgiving or so, you start to maybe give Hurdle a look on a lower line as a center and maybe, yeah, maybe promote a kid for hustling, whether it's LeBanc, Meyer, Carlson, whoever.
I still think Timo might get a look as soon as he's healthy, although he's going to need time to recover from mono. So he's probably going to see some AHL time first, but you have to believe that if Timo's ready to go, that that's the guy they're going to go with.
Absolutely. And like you said, you know, if in order for a young player to crack this roster, they have to push somebody out because the Sharks already have 12 right. NHL caliber, you know, forwards kind of thing. And if someone's going to get pushed out, it's going to be one of Wingles or Nieto. And I don't think they want to scratch Wingles because he's making that much money, is what, 2.5, something like
you
that.
You can't scratch him. He's unscratched. You can't put him in the AHL. You can't sit him as a healthy scratch and sit him at, well, you could, but I mean, you're going to be really, really up against the cap if you're playing him as your 13th forward. I mean, I guess you could move other less expensive guys in, but you're kind of stuck with Wingles at this point. You didn't move him. Now, whether that they didn't try to move him, we could speculate about, you know, did they try to move him? Was that even in the plan? Like, you would think it would be logically, but the Sharks have done things that aren't logical many times before. So, it sucks because, like, the season's like, hasn't even started. I'm already, like, mid-season form where I'm just like, the Sharks are
You're already ranting about the
Trade
Sharks.
Trade everyone.
Why didn't they do this?
Well, like, I'm already in mid-season form.
Well, I mean, like I had mentioned earlier, maybe it's a case of you hold on to certain guys, see how they perform, and then you determine, you kind of make a determination. Maybe Wilson and company want to see exactly, okay, somebody mute your phone. Wilson wants to make a determination, or the higher-ups want to make a determination. They want to see LeBanc after 20 games, or Meyer after 20 games, or name another rookie. But they want to see what they're going to get, and then maybe that's when they make that determination of, okay, here's the guy who's expendable, here's the guy we can move, and then you see him showcase for 5 or 6 games. This is not undocumented in Sharks history. We saw this happen back in, what was it, I believe, 2000, when Steve Shields went down, or very early in the season. Nabby came up. Nabby looked stellar. His first start, you know, was an overtime 0-0 tie against Patrick Waugh in Colorado.
Yeah.
And that kind of told the Sharks, we might have a new goalie, and we're going to ride with this. And then once Shields was healthy, they had him start like 5 games consecutively, gave him, you know, kind of showcased him a little bit. And then a week later, all of a sudden, he was an Anaheim Duck with Jeff Friesen to get Timo Solani. So maybe we see something like that happen again. But as we stated earlier, it's not like they have the cap room to move somebody who isn't either making similar or less salary. But I could see them maybe making a move to maybe get a pick, or prospect, something else to help fill that pipeline again. Or in my world, whether it's Wingles, whoever the forward is, if they move, hey, maybe they're actually able to pair him with a number 5 defenseman on the Sharks, and we get DeMello promoted. But that's just me. Anyway,
yeah, that's the other thing Hockey Jerk kind of just said in the chat too, where You know, it's like, it's the same thing. Like the idea that Wingles isn't going to be in the starting lineup is the same thing as it, like Dylan's going to be in the lineup. It's too much money for him to sit in the press box. There's just, it's unless just not going to happen. Right. Unless, well, that's exactly it. But there's this idea that DeMelo's going to push him out without, you know, him actually being out the door is silly. It's not going to happen. Your defenseman, it's going to be Dylan Schlemko on the bottom pair.
We'll see.
Take it to the bank. All right, let's see. What else we got here today?
Speaking of defensemen.
Yes. Speaking of defensemen, Dan Boyle returned to San Jose to retire and call it a career. I'm a big Dan Boyle guy, so it's sad to see him call it a career, but also at the same time, it's like, good. Like,
well, it's awesome to see him. Well, it's awesome to see him hang him up wearing teal.
Yes. Yes.
Despite winning a cup with Tampa.
Well, I mean, the thing with Tampa Bay, I mean, that was really like the ownership in Tampa Bay. Now, granted, it's a different ownership group now. It's a different management group. But I mean, basically, from my understanding of it, was he only had a no trade when he came to San Jose. So they basically told him, we will put you on waivers. You will be an Atlanta Thrasher, or you can take this trade to San Jose. And if you give me the option between playing in Atlanta or playing in San Jose, I'm taking San Jose every time. And that's not just because I'm homer. I mean, the Thrashers were absolutely putrid at that point. I'm not surprised.
The team was so bad, they don't exist anymore.
That's right. Yeah, basically. I mean, I don't know if this was during the phase where they thought that they could appeal to the home crowd by just grabbing as many African-American players as possible. That was a thing that happened. Dan Boyle, awesome defenseman. I don't know if he's a Hall of Fame defenseman, but he was damn good. He was always awesome in teal. A player that I felt should have been captain.
Absolutely.
Probably when they made the captaincy change, it should have went. I mean, I understand when they gave it to Blake, I thought that was a smart thing to do at the time. But it should have went from Blake to Boyle, in my opinion. Not that I have anything against Thornton.
See, I thought giving it to Blake was colossally dumb because we all knew that Blake was, he was on the horse heading towards the sunset. And mm-hmm. to me, at that point, I thought that, no, you want to give it to somebody who's going to be here for a few years. You want to get you want something stable. And I just thought, like, give Blake an A. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Just based on his seniority and his career. Sure, he's already earned it. I don't care if it's a brand new franchise for him. But for me, Boyle, no. I thought you should have gave it to Boyle. And in fact, leading up to that season, I was actually at, I believe at the time they call it the teal and white game, where they have some scrimmages. But prior to that, you're able to go in and they've got the players lined up at tables and you can go get autographs and whatnot. And I was at the table that Boyle was on. And there was a couple other guys like Nicholas Wallin or who, shall we say, nondescript people, or maybe a rookie or two. But going down the line, Boyle was the last one at the table. And so I'm getting, like a shark sign autographed by the other players. But when I get to Boyle, I actually have a jersey to give to him to sign. Mm-hmm. And my only question to him, the only thing I spoke to him while I was getting that sign was, did they make you captain yet? And most people, he's just kind of, okay. And he's really not looking at people. He knows this is an autograph. It's a function of being a member. And so he just kind of stops and he just kind of looks up and he just goes, not yet. and so I was kind of like, okay, hopefully that's a good sign or something. So yeah, the fact that they didn't name him captain, I thought that was a bonehead mistake. But yeah, I'm going to miss Boyler. I loved what he brought to the team. I love that. If you watch the retirement ceremony, he told Randy Hahn commented that Boyle was one of those few people that after the games wouldn't tell you, well, we tried to, we gave 110% and all the cliches and everything
in our game. Got to get pucks in deep.
Yeah. We didn't get enough pucks. We didn't get enough shots on and all the cliches that you usually hear. And Boyle was definitely not a cliche guy. After you're done watching this show, you're on YouTube, go ahead, put Dan Boyle and put, just Media, Dan Boyle Media. After you'll see a litany of different Dan Boyle post game interviews where he's clearly not speaking in cliches.
Yeah, yeah, true.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to be a little more brief, but yeah, you know, Dan Boyle retiring. I mean, he wasn't the same after that. After the concussion he got from, I think it was Maxime Lapierre. Yeah, wasn't the same, but you know what? Was always a great NHL player, great defenseman, maybe the best in Sharks history. And this is coming from somebody who absolutely loves Marc-Edouard Vlasic. So, I mean, to see him get the success he had while being undrafted, winning a Stanley Cup, winning a gold medal with Canada, setting franchise records for defensemen on two different teams is incredible, and I wish him the best in retirement.
Okay, so I'm going to go one more thing around the horn here, and then we'll move on to the next topic.
Yeah, Hall I do have fame. One memory for him.
Oh, you have one? Okay. First, Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Hall of Fame. In my opinion, maybe on a week, in a week class. I don't know if he's a surefire Hall of Famer. I think he could be. He's on that. I mean, he has a Stanley Cup. He has the gold medal. He did put up some points. I'm not sure, you know. I wouldn't put money on him getting in, but it wouldn't surprise me to see him get in a weaker class. Drew.
Yeah, I agree with you. I would give the odds like maybe like a 25% to 75%, you know, 75% chance he doesn't get in kind of thing. But I mean, he could. He was a great, great defenseman. He wasn't, you know, like Nick Lidstrom or anything like that.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's 50-50. I would, I mean, who's Nick Lidstrom? I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like you said, got the cup, got the gold, got stellar numbers with two different teams. I actually hope the fact that he was undrafted and still has those accolades and you know, that hardware in his back pocket, I hope maybe that lends, and obviously I'm biased, but I hope that lends some credence to him trying to get into the Hall of Fame just based on the fact that he was undrafted. But, you know, I think it's 50-50.
Yeah, I mean, my heart says yes, but my brain is not so sure.
Yeah.
All right, so moving on. Nail Yakupov gets traded out of the Oilers for basically a bag of pucks. He goes to the St. Louis Blues for Zach Pachuro and a conditional pick. The conditional pick is a third-round pick in 2017. If Yakupov can score 15 goals, it becomes a second.
Is Edmonton who we're talking about, so it could yes. be a pretty high pick.
Yeah, there you go. It'd be the
Blues pick. Yeah.
So it's not going to be a good pick.
Yeah, either. True that.
Zach, I think this is more has to do with like a contract limit thing or something. Cause I know the Blues are pretty close to their contract limit. For those that don't know, a team can carry 50 contracts. Some guys don't count against that, obviously. If you own the rights to somebody and they're an AHL player, but they have, a junior player and they haven't signed their ELC yet, they're still yours, but they don't count towards that 50 contract limit. I think that's what's going on here. Cause look at, this is a guy, this guy's 22. He's just turned 22 and he is basically spent most of his time being a mediocre scorer in the NHL, 20 point scorer in the AHL. I mean, or ECHL, sorry, not even the AHL, the ECHL. So, I think this is just something that they had to take and the draft pick was all the Oilers really wanted here. AJ, what do you think about this trade?
Wasn't Yakupov like really highly touted a couple seasons ago?
He's the first overall draft pick.
Yeah, I even remember a couple games, the Sharks versus Oilers, where Drew Remenda was one of the very first guys that they talked about. But then again, and I hate to throw somebody under the bus. I don't mean to do this. But let's just say I was privy to a conversation between two hockey people who call the game. I was fortunate enough to be privy to a little conversation, and one of them really threw Yakupov under the bus. And this is last season. And this was like, you know, this is like February. And to me, it's, I think that guy wore out his welcome. There is a work ethic that I think, and maybe it's the whole Russian thing or whatever. There is a work ethic that you're expected to have, and it felt like for the talent that Yakupov has, he doesn't have the work ethic at this point. And maybe that's something that needs to be drilled into him, what have you. But I was a little surprised to see Edmonton let him go. Drew, do you think maybe even Todd McClellan maybe kind of help push him with this?
I mean, I don't know, because I do not like this trade for Edmonton. I mean, even if you get the second for it, Yakupov is still only 22 years old, and you really didn't get that much of a look at him, even though he's been in the NHL for, I think, 4 years now. I mean, he had a really good rookie year, which I think may have actually been the lockout shortened year. And he hasn't really produced much since, but you play on Edmonton. You're only getting 14 minutes a night. His possession numbers really actually aren't all that bad. And if you put him with good players, he will probably be a good player himself. The other thing is that he was second on the team in primary shot contributions, which is taking a shot attempt or passing to somebody who took a shot attempt. Second on the team to Taylor Hall, which means this season he could have been the most, he could have produced the most offense, even more than Connor McDavid per 60.
See, that's the interesting thing too, because I thought when he kind of had like a little renaissance there when he was partnered with McDavid before either McDavid or he got hurt. So I thought that was interesting. I mean, you look at the Oilers this summer. I mean, you gave up, you've moved Taylor Hall and Nail Yakupov, and you have Adam Larson in a second to show for it. That's brutal.
And this is like this is the team that Brody has as his black horse pick.
Well, you know what? I don't blame Brody for that, though, because Connor McDavid's that good. Like, he could put this team on his back.
But it seems like, I mean, Edmonton, you've heard the term, chopping your nose off to spite your face. Edmonton seems to be that team that chops off their face to spite their nose.
Something else I wanted to point out, too, this wasn't really a great draft year when you look at it. I'm looking at the first round. There's some decent players in here. Don't get me wrong. I mean, look at Morgan Riley's a stud. Jacob Trouba's great. Hampus Lindholm, fantastic. But, I mean, like, Ryan Murray's good. But, I mean, you got Galchenyuk, you got Griffin Reinhardt. I mean, there's a lot of – there's for every hit in this first round, there's a lot of misses, too. Or just guys that haven't, you know, panned out yet. So or, I think that's...
Or guys are holding out on their RFA status.
You know. I mean, there's definitely not the greatest draft class where they took Yakupov first. I mean, at the time, I think you could, you know, argue looking back in 2020 drafting it. Yeah, you probably take a Lindholm or a Morgan Riley or... you know what I mean? Like, you can do that. So... I don't know. It's a terrible trade for the Oilers. They suck.
To put it ever so succinctly.
Well, their front office is just like for every time you think that they've done something smart. I mean, look at they made that big trade for Reinhardt, who they sent back down to the minors again. Like they're having a tough go. I mean, that Lucic contract doesn't. I'm not a fan yet, and I don't think it's gonna be. I mean, this the is Oilers a team that has. pieces to be good, but they just it's like you said, they cut off their face in spite of their nose.
But no, I swear to God, the Oilers just walk around the front office just going, "We're not the Canucks. We're not the Canucks."
A couple more retirements. Barrett Jackman and Mike Santarelli also retired. Not a huge I mean, Barrett Jackman, I kind of always had a soft spot for Jack Batman. I mean, he's not, you know, he wasn't a great, great hockey player, but still cool guy. Mike Santarelli, by all accounts, you know, class guy again. But, you know, doesn't really move the needle for me. Drew, how do you feel about these retirings?
Other fun fact about Jackman, he was a Calder Trophy winner.
Oh, there you go.
But, you know, I think it's really interesting, or the most interesting about this, or these retirements, is how young they are. Jackman's only 34 and Santarelli's only 30. And even though, like you said, they're not great players, they're still serviceable.
Yeah.
I mean, Santarelli had 33 points last season. Like, I'll take that on my fourth line. Mm-hmm. And last year was Jackman's like first really bad year. Like he had 5 points, I think, in like 78 games or something like that.
Right. But
if you look back, it's like he's not much for point production. He has a decent plus minus depending on how much you buy into that stat. So sure. I think a team still could have taken Barrett Jackman. I'm not sure who, like off the top of my head, but there are teams out there who would have been a good fit for him. So I'm surprised they weren't able to find the work and that they elected to retire when they probably still could have played in the NHL.
Yeah, no doubt. Sorry. The Red Wings, here's an interesting, you want to talk about, there's two really big stories, I think, right now, and that's the number of RFAs that are still not under contract, and the other one that's kind of slid under the radar, the Red Wings are like $4 million over the salary cap right now.
Closer to five.
Like, they have, like, days, literally days to get cap compliant, or I guess the NHL has to decide that the Red Wings can't play.
How great would that be?
The seed from the league.
Well, no, because you can't play without a cap compliant team. So basically, I think what would happen. I mean, no one's ever tested the NHL on this, right? So if the Wings can't get cap compliant, I mean, they're either gonna have to skate with like a really silly roster. But even then, like, you can't hide. It's not like you can just hide somebody in the AHL, right? Because that only.
They have
$1 million of that is going to count against the cap.
They have Steve Ott on the team. They're already skating with a silly roster.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I look at this team. I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, obviously, logic would say you got to move a goalie. You're probably at this point moving Jimmy Howard.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to give up on a 24-year-old Peter Mrazek for a 32-year-old Jimmy Howard. But
who do you get to take him?
That's it.
And the other thing is, who do you have to replace him? They don't even have a backup. Quality goaltender in their lineup, it looks like.
Yeah, but okay, so Mrazek plays 70 games, whatever, and you find, I'm sure as part of the deal, you could find somebody to fill in that backup goalie spot. But my whole thing is, who the hell are you going to find that's going to take that Jimmy Howard contract? Who wants a guy making $5.3 million for the next 3 years who's a 32-year-old goalie, who, you know, hasn't done a whole lot? I mean, he wasn't the goalie the last time the Red Wings won a cup, right?
I think was it Osgood still?
That's what I thought.
I feel like Jimmy Howard has a cup ring. Maybe not.
I'm not sure. Hockey jerk, get on that. but yeah, it's either way, though. You know, you're pointing out his age and that cap. And we've seen it, and I don't know if it all started when like the Sharks had to pull that Sophie's Choice between Nabby and Marlowe, but it seems like since then all of a sudden the Dallas Stars are the exception, but you stopped seeing teams kind of spending that big Patrick Waugh, Marty Brodeur cash because they were seeing better ways to kind of spend that money, so you saw teams, look at the ridiculous, and obviously Martin Jones, and we know the backstory, but for what he did last year, show me another goalie who's gone to a Stanley Cup in the last 3 years who's only making $3 million, you know what I mean? But with Jimmy Howard, I just want to find out who is going to make that deal, who is in need of, whether it's trying to hit the cap floor, or who is in such need of a slightly better than pedestrian goalie. I mean, who?
Nobody. That's the problem. There's more goalies than players to position them. A year down the road,
Las Vegas
for them. They'd be. There's a goalie there. You know, Dallas gets a lot of crap for their goalie situation. Look, Detroit is basically in the same boat. They've got over $9 million invested in their goaltending. It's stupid. And
Dallas,
they get
is ridiculous.
They're not Dallas, because at least Peter Mrazek's like a good goalie. It's not like Niemi and Lehtonen are both terrible.
yeah. And hockey jerk pointing out that Jimmy Howard backed up Osgood 09.
Oh, there you go.
Okay.
So I knew he'd be on it.
This is something that I'm curious to see how they're going to get out of this, because, and the other thing is, I don't know Johan Franzen's situation, but I know he's on the LTIR. But if he comes off, then they're even in more trouble. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what his status is.
Can you imagine if they didn't move Datsyuk?
All things after, they'd be screwed.
Well, and here's my question too: when did they sign Zetterberg to this ridiculously ginormous deal? I mean, he's making six. He's on the books for $6 million through 2021. Are you serious? At 36 years old?
Yeah, I know. Well, they signed that back in 2009-10, so this is before they really nailed the back dipping deals.
Yeah, I know, but still, I mean, both just that deal and the Franz Nielsen deal. I mean, come on. I mean, but hopefully, this is a case of you know, finally, you see a team get bitten in the rear end by the, you know, that those type of deals. But I'm still with you, man. Like, the most obvious thing is you move Howard. You know, or you try to find somebody to like take Mike Green, but
is it possible you buy Howard out?
You can't. You're already past your buyout period.
Oh. Yeah.
And even if you bought him out, that doesn't really solve your problem because you're still, you know, you're about five million over the cap. You're still eating half of that hit or a third of that hit from the buyout. So I mean, it doesn't really. You're still moving. You'd have to buy out Howard and then move somebody else on top of that. So I this is gonna be
done.
Yeah, they're in trouble. Like that's serious trouble. I'm curious. I have to go bug some Wings fans that I know and figure out what they think of how they're gonna get out of this mess.
Let me ask you one thing. Are you a little surprised that we haven't actually heard more about this in NHL media?
Yes,
actually, especially with this. So. With as close as we are to the start of the season.
I think everyone just because you know what I think. Honestly, I think it's just that. It's Detroit, right? And everyone just assumes Detroit's the best run team in the league, which they haven't been in a long time.
Yeah.
But people, I think they just get the benefit of the doubt because they're Detroit and they're in trouble. I want to see how they get under the cap.
Does anybody think it's ironic that the city that went bankrupt has the hockey team that's over the salary cap? I think that's ironic.
How are the Maple Leafs not involved in this somehow?
Maple Leafs are fine. They've been, they're
I know, but they always, direction. Yeah, but they always seem to, you know, make the bad deal for the wrong goalie at the wrong time. So,
we'll see. All right, so let's move on. I was kind of debating how we would do a season preview. I know it's going to be hard because I know that with three shows, I kind of wanted to do a unique take on it. So what I decided to do was we would take a Sharks player to watch this season, a player in the NHL to watch this season, and a team in the NHL to watch this season. So let's start with a Sharks player to watch this season. Who are you most interested in watching for, and for whatever reason, doesn't have to be a nice one. It could be a mean one. Who's the most interesting Shark in the world? AJ.
We'll see. Now that you put that little... you predicated it on a rule, and I went, okay, so I'm not going to go with the obvious choice if you know who I am. I'm going to go with Joe Thornton. He's actually the guy that I want to see. Like, will he be able to continue what he did last season? Obviously, you know, 82 points over 82 games last year, point a game player, and a lot of people go, well, you know, he's usually a little bit better than that. He trailed off. Well, let's take into account the guy had a concussion early on in the season. It took him a while to buy into Pete DeBoer's system, but once he was on, didn't he have like the most points in the league from January on, just under Sidney Crosby? So the guy was so the dude was producing at a ridiculous rate. Now that if you have a healthy Thornton, who's already bought into DeBoer's system, who knows what's going on, who's very comfortable with Pavs and Hurdle and what's going on. He knows his role on the team and a contract year. You know, this guy loves hockey. He's a hockey rat. He wants to stay in San Jose. And I don't know that it's going to be predicated upon Marlowe signing a almost exact same deal. I think he wants to stay. I think he's going to be playing for a 2 to 3 year extension. Probably three is what he's going to want, but he's playing for an extension this year, I think. And a full healthy jumbo. That's the guy I'm really interested to see what we get from him this season.
Drew, go ahead.
I like that pick. I'll take the more obvious one because I'm not as fun.
Brendan Dillon.
I'm saying Schlemko. because I'm curious to see how those two are going to work together. Because the biggest problem the Sharks had, aside from speed, which I guess if Ian picks Bodker, this would be perfect. But that bottom D pair just got killed against Pittsburgh. And even against St. Louis, they didn't look all that good either. So I'm hoping that maybe Schlemko is kind of the answer to Brendan Dillon, much like Paul Martin was the answer to Brent Burns. Will it? I have no clue. It's not as certain as Paul Martin was, but we'll see how it plays out. And I'm curious to see how he's going to look on the power play.
Makes sense. My pick is going to be Hurdle. I think there's a lot of questions surrounding Hurdle. What is Hurdle? What is he going to be going forward? You know, what role will he fill when it's his turn to step up? So I think I'm interested to see how they deploy him. I'm interested to see how he plays if they do put him at center at some point, just to see how that works out, or if he hangs out with the Joes. It's an interesting time for Hurdle. So I'm really curious to see what Hurdle does.
Outstanding. Moving on.
I just got some updates from scores because I know we're live and people are going to mostly listen to this later. But the Sharks lost in overtime to the Anaheim Ducks, and the Barracuda are getting absolutely bitch slapped by the Bakersfield Condors by a 5-0 score.
This is a basketball game. What?
Can we say that on this channel?
Yeah, you can say something.
He did it last week too. Already getting that E.
It's just a minor. It's like this PG-13.
PG-13, still an E.
Yeah, you will hear that word on an episode of Friends. So
that's right. It's all good. Yeah, it's fine. I try to limit the F bombs. Is what I try to do. Last show, not so much. All right. So around the league, what's a player you're interested in watching around the league? And I have some things from Kevin here too, who couldn't be with us tonight, but we are all Kevin, so I will let you know what Kevin thinks.
Girlies love Kevin.
It's true. All right, AJ, go ahead. Who you watching around the league this year?
Maybe it's just because there's so much of a contract dispute going on with it. My guy right now is Johnny Gaudreau. Led the Flames in points last season. Killed it in the in the World Cup, looked very good. So the fact that Calgary and him have not been able to get it together. Now, granted, I've looked it up a little bit, and he wants kind of a big deal, looking for $8 million, and Calgary is going, we're 6.5, and but either way, the fact that Calgary and Johnny Hockey have not been able to get on the same page to get this contract going when we're 3 days away from starting the season, I think that's just that gives pleasure to my eyeballs. I want to watch how this plays out. But yeah, my guy, definitely Johnny Gaudreau, because he is he's the key to the Flames right now. So he is their new Aginla.
Interesting. I'm gonna give Kevin's pick here. Kevin is most interested to watch Mr. Steven Stamkos. Was seventh last year in goals for 36. Dropped below a point per game average for the first time since his rookie year, with all the off-ice chaos, obviously, about his contract. With all that stuff out of the way, he can focus on hockey again, which should be scary for the rest of the league, and I absolutely agree with that. Stamkos, he's looking to see if he can get back to that 50-goal mark. This is one of the seasons where he could possibly do it. Drew, who's your player to watch?
My player to watch is Connor McDavid, and everyone's going to hate me for that because, of course he picks that. There was all the hype around him last year. He performed well when he was healthy with the Oilers. He was amazing in the World Cup of Hockey. But we kind of mentioned it earlier. How much is McDavid's performance going to impact the Edmonton Oilers and where they finish in the division? I don't think he's good enough to make them a playoff team just now, but I think he can bring them close. So I'm curious to see if he puts up big numbers, if he's point per game pace, if Edmonton can draw close to a playoff spot this year.
Yeah, I think a lot of that's going to depend on Cam Talbot too. McDavid's, I can't argue with that. My pick is St. Louis Blues defenseman Colton Pareko. This is a guy who really just kind of, I don't watch a lot of college hockey. So this is a guy that completely flew under the radar for me. And I just can't imagine. Like, this guy is so good. And I'm just curious to see if, you know, how he comes into his second year and how he's going to play. Because I think this guy is going to be the cornerstone of the Blues going forward. So that's what I'm interested to see. I really want to see how he steps up. I thought he did really good in the playoffs. I think he was victimized a little bit later in the playoffs. But I think with the experience, I think, you know, for a third-round pick, this guy might be something else.
Was good in the World Cup, too.
He did look really good in the World Cup. All right, so any teams that you guys are interested in seeing this year, kind of curious about?
Aside from the Detroit Red Wings?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to go with Detroit, go with Detroit. Drew, go ahead.
Okay, now this pains me. Pains me to do this.
If you say the Kings, I'm going to bitch slap you.
My team to watch, hockey jerk, is the Arizona Coyotes.
Oh, God, here we go.
Not the Carolina Hurricanes. The Arizona Coyotes are the team to watch this year. Really young team. Maybe the most talented team at some point. Maybe very soon they'll be the most talented team in the league. And somehow they still have the worst playoff odds according to Bovada. I don't buy into it, so I'm going to take that bet all day, every day, and twice on Sundays. So
football takes terrible.
I think we can all agree that Arizona is a bubble team right now. They have the chance to make the playoffs. Whether or not they do, you know, varies from person to person, like between me and Hockey Jerk. But, they're going to be fun to watch. And it's just a matter of how much experience and goaltending is going to come into play this season. It could be really good, and they might surprise people like they did in 2012.
Kevin's answer was the Florida Panthers, because apparently Kevin just wants to move to Florida, apparently. Panthers, this is a team that interested him a lot last season. Most of the players' stocks are rising, which is absolutely true. And Jaromír Jágr is obviously, you know, Jaromír Jágr. He will never die. He's a vampire. He drinks the blood of
Jonathan Huberdeau, apparently.
I was going to say, Jágr drinks the blood of you know, young women that take selfies of him when he's sleeping.
That's right, yes. Young models. But they continue to shake up their management core. Dale Tallon got promoted to president. And, they have new GM, new everything, right? So it's going to be interesting to see how they do, especially with the new additions, Jason Demers, for example. You got Keith Yandel and Jason Demers on the blue line. So I think that's could be interesting based on what they already have there. I mean, this is a team that just, this team should just get better and better and better and better. Although Huberdeau being out is bad. I didn't really read that verbatim, obviously. There was nothing about bloodsucking in Kevin's thing, but I thought I would have take my liberties on it. Kevin, send your hate mail my way.
Nice.
AJ, go ahead.
For me, it's I said it last year, and I'm staying with it. The Calgary Flames are my team. Now that they have Brian Elliott in goal, which was my question a year ago, was I loved their blue line. It seemed like they have a ton of balance. They have some skill at forward, obviously, Johnny Gaudreau. But the question for them was always, who's in net? Now that they've got a solid netminder in Brian Elliott, not to mention the fact that they have a ton of cap room and they've got a decent pipeline. I'm looking for Calgary to do. They kind of disappointed me last season, but once again, I'm going to put that on the carousel that was between the pipes. I'm looking for Calgary to do something interesting and to knock one of the California teams out of the top three in the Pacific this season.
Nice. My pick is going to be the Colorado Avalanche. I think that there is a lot more talent on there than their record shows. And yes, they are in the toughest division in hockey, bar none.
But no more Patrick Waugh.
But no, and that's exactly why I think they're interesting team to watch. You have a guy like Matt Duchene, who is a great penalty killer. You know what he didn't do under Patrick Waugh? Kill penalties. I mean, you just little things like that. And you have guys that are dynamic. You have guys like, if you can take the leash off a little bit and let Matt Duchene be Matt Duchene and let Nathan MacKinnon be Nathan MacKinnon. And, you know, and you still got some wily vets there too. But I think if you let some of these guys play the way that we know they can play without you know, Patrick Waugh's ridiculous system. This is a team that might really surprise people this year. I don't know if they're a playoff team, but I think that they have the potential to be. I mean, look at Varlamov's a great goalie. They have the forwards. Their defense, not so fantastic, but it's
Jack Johnson, top pair.
Yes. No, Eric Johnson.
Eric Johnson. Ron Johnson. Oh, same thing.
And hey, and hey,
no bad Americans.
Peter Budaj just got sent down, so they can always try to get him back because hashtag bring back Budaj.
Right. Look, I mean, I think that the Colorado Avalanche, they should be an interesting team. Another team that I really struggled with that I kind of...
No, you only get one.
I get two. I can do whatever.
Wait. So I could have picked the Hurricanes too?
You could pick the Hurricanes too. You want to say the Hurricanes too?
Hurricanes.
All right. Let me do this, and then you guys can yell at me for breaking rules later. The other team that I'm really interested to see what they do is the Nashville Predators.
So we get three now? Is that what we're saying?
No. Hurricanes are mine. No one else gets them.
So he's going with Colorado, Nashville.
Yeah, because I think Nashville has the best decor in the league now.
Okay.
I think they did before, too.
Now it's really good. Now it's really, really, really good. AJ, do you want to add another one?
Yes. The team to watch... is Vancouver, and that's just for when Comedy Central goes out and you need something else to watch.
That's fair.
Pretty much.
My second team's Carolina. Sebastian Aho, Alexander Zelkovich, Noah Hanifin. Come on.
A hockey jerk is watching this right now going, fight me!
Oh, don't worry. We'll fight each other.
Oh, man. All right. Final thing. I hate doing this. I'm not even going to do what I wrote down here, I think.
Oh, come on. Do it. Do it!
Nope. Not doing it.
I'm still making my pick.
That's fine. Stanley Cup prediction. Who do you got in the finals? Because it matters, right?
Yeah, because, like, you show me the person who gets this right regularly. You know, everybody's going to – you can throw crap at the wall, and eventually something's going to stick.
When I say it and I'm right, I'm a genius.
Yeah, of course.
It was very calculated. I used my analytics for this prediction.
Yes.
Funnily enough, I picked Pittsburgh to win the whole thing back at when the playoffs started, but that was when the playoffs started, not when the season started. And there was tons of people that predicted that Pittsburgh would win the whole thing.
I was one of them.
Yeah. So, you know what? For me, now I'm stepping out on a limb here. I know. Maybe I'm just trying to curry favor with the audience that doesn't normally watch me because I'm never on here, but I'm going with Sharks over Lightning.
Ooh.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Wow. Kevin has Lightning over the Blackhawks. Drew, what do you got?
Well, strangely enough, I also have Sharks over Lightning in 7. And I think that's what Slushy has in the chat.
Oh, well, then never mind.
Rockets got Oilers in 7.
Ooh, Oilers are not making the Cup final. Let's go. All right, my pick is I'm going to actually just declare it down because it's completely meaningless. I think the Blackhawks are going to beat the Penguins in the final. I think that the Penguins. I know everyone's like, "Where's your Sharks?" But Penguins are kind of the same way as the Sharks. They didn't really lose anything that's going to make it hard for them to return. So I feel like if anyone has a team that can get back in there the year after, I mean, the Sharks might too, but I just think the West's a lot harder to get through than the East.
How great would this be to be like a repeat kind of what was it, like 08 and 09?
08, 09, yeah.
Yeah, where this time we see Pittsburgh win it and then the following year lose it and it's the same two teams involved?
I mean, I'm game for that. The Sharks make the finals, and especially if they beat the Penguins, I don't even care. Like, look what happened to Detroit after, and you know what? I wouldn't care.
Yeah.
Wouldn't even care. But I think that Chicago, they got bounced by a St. Louis team. The West is so funny, but it's tough. Like, I don't like St. Louis without that kind of two-headed monster. I'm not a Jake Allen guy. I don't think Jake Allen has to prove that he can be the guy to me. So I think that the Blues kind of take a step back. I think the Predators are better. I know a lot of people are picking the Predators to be in the final. They're not dumb. I think that there's good reasons. So I just think it's too sexy though. So I'm just saying, yeah, I'm going to go with Chicago because it's like the Giants. They have like their even odd year thing going on, and This is when Chicago's supposed to win. They lost last year. This year they win. Just not the Kings, please. Fair enough.
I like Vince's thing. I'm going with to be decided versus to be decided because it's October.
Yep.
I know. You know what? I wanted to do something different. I didn't want to.
Well, that's what I'm saying is you see the guys on NHL.com or, I mean, pick your poison when it comes, whether it's Wazinski or whatever, you know, everybody does this just before the season starts. They make their pick and, you know, it's usually about once every 10 years, somebody hit it. So, right. And I've said this for years and I will continue to say it. Predictions are stupid for two reasons. The one is that if for some reason what you predicted comes true, then you come off like a know-it-all jerk off who's patting themselves on the back, and then it's, you know, well, what are the lottery numbers and all that type of stuff. And if you get it wrong, you look like a know-nothing Nimrod. So there's really no winning with predictions. With that said, San Jose over Tampa.
Okay, you and me can pat each other on the back because we have the same pick.
There you go. And I know Slurpee Jack thinks that we ripped him off, but whatever.
Yeah, me and Hockey Jerk are going to have a Twitter war after this show, apparently. Just to let you know.
Oh, sweet.
Follow that on Twitter.
Yeah, follow that on Twitter. It's going to be more than the debates. Come on.
I'll be there for comedy relief.
Appreciate everyone obviously watching the show. Look, I know there's a lot of stuff going on. You had football, you had the debates, you know, and look at, I don't blame you for wanting to watch a train wreck. I people like watching things blow up and crash into things. And
there's a Canucks game on.
Yeah. All right. Dear God. All right. Listen, AJ, why don't you tell them about the new podcast that you have been doing and you are two episodes into now?
Well, we have a new podcast. Thank you very much for asking. There you go. No, you know, rising from the ashes of teal tinted glasses, we are the phoenix that is the Pucknologists. You can find us on everything, thanks to Ian Reed, SoundCloud, Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn. There's probably like three other platforms that I'm not even aware of at this point, but we're everywhere. We're badass nationwide. Follow us on at Pucknologists on Twitter. Send any questions you have, especially for Ian's Hockey 101, to pucknologists@gmail.com. And yeah, we should be rolling out a new show every Thursday when the Sharks don't play on Wednesday. And if they do play on Wednesday, we'll roll out the show by Friday. But you can look forward to it at the end of every week. Me, Rocket Backhander, Hockey Jerk, and a guest to be named later. And that's what we're doing with it.
Drew, what's new and exciting?
Well, my name's Drew Weber. I'm a credentialed writer for Pucknology. Thanks, guys. You can find me at Puck_over_glass. And remember, you can always find me using the hashtag #WeAreAllKevin.
Did he just say over under?
Over under glass.
Under over.
Under over.
Under under. Under over.
This is over the under. Biggest podcast. All right. I'm Ian Reed. You can find me at iReadPucknology on the Twitter machine. Again, we had a question off the top of the show, which was really awesome. Looking forward to hopefully getting more questions and stuff in for stuff for us to discuss as the season gets going, as we try to keep our content somewhat original and not just a repeat of After Dark and Pucknologists. And we don't want that. So
next week's question, does pineapple belong on a pizza? Stay tuned.
Wow. There you have it. The answer is absolutely yes. Yeah. So listen, I appreciate everyone watching. The writer's room will continue coming at you Sunday night at 7 o'clock Pacific. The only time you will not see a writer's room on Sunday is if the Sharks are playing, where the After Dark will precede the Sharks game. And that will be that. And we'll just be off for the week. So, with that, thanks for watching and have a good night. Be sure to follow the hosts on Twitter, Ian Reed at iReadPucknology, Drew Weber at Puck_over_glass, Kevin Lacey at Kevin Lacey 22. Be sure to follow our YouTube channel, Pucknology Writers Room.